Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulous, the fluoridated, the incredibly corrupt, and yet it's somehow known as Transparency International's least corrupt country in the world. You know why that is, ladies and gentlemen? It's because Transparency International allow countries to voluntarily fill in the form. So they send it to New Zealand, and they say, hey bro, have you got any corruption going on over there? And New Zealand goes, nah, we don't. And they send it back blank, and then we become back number one. I'm not making it up. That's actually how it works. You can't make it up, bro. You cannot make this stuff up. Okay, anyway. I have to control myself sometimes when I just think about just how freaking corrupt my country is. Oh my God, it's descending into darkness and madness. Anyway. Somebody from a country that's far more corrupt and far darker, America, Mr. John Carman, formerly of the Secret Service. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, it's good to be back.
It's been a long, long time, has it not?
Well, that's a long plane flight, you know.
Yeah. Tell me what's been transpiring for you.
Oh, goodness. Since the last time we talked.
Well, either that or whatever's on your mind now.
Oh, I've got all kinds of things on my mind. I mean, you were just talking about how corrupt some of these countries are. I remember an author, he was either out of Australia or New Zealand, and I was in a book called Drug Wars, I believe. But it had sort of a slant on all the smuggling that goes on because people like to bring in wild animals, and that's a violation of the fish and wildlife stuff. But Flight 370 still hasn't appeared yet. It's still out there somewhere. Do you remember that one?
A lot of confusion about that case as well. Nobody seems to have any clue what the heck's going on. And I've had all these kind of people throwing theories at me. And I was just like, look, bro, in the lack of all available evidence, let's just assume it's aliens, okay? Okay? You know?
I could do that. I mean, we could talk about that stuff too, because with my background in the Secret Service alone, we actually have a record of a manifest sheet. You know what that is, right?
A sheet that makes things come into the material world through
no.
The materium? No? That's not manifestation?
No, but that was a damn good second first guess, because some people probably would have gone that direction. But no, it's just an ordinary list of people on a plane flight that normally they just have to list. So they call it a manifest. And it lists the people that were on a special trip by Eisenhower over to a special Air Force base. They say it was Holloman Air Force Base, when I believe, in fact, it was probably Edwards Air Force Base here in California. And he brought along a friend of his who was a former movie star, Jackie Gleason. So we're talking before your time frame. back in the early mid-50s before Kennedy was president. And they had a list of these agents who were present at this meeting where they met a flying discs that hovered above the ground by so many feet, and they had a special meeting for 6 to 8 hours. They shut the whole base down, the whole nine yards. But it was just kind of funny. It just kind of sparked a slight memory on that stuff, because I've done research on even that stuff too.
Well, I think that when it comes down to aliens or unexplained things or whatever, you know what's really, really bad and really generates a hell of a lot of rumors that aren't based on fact? Secrecy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, like I was going to say earlier, the stuff with the Flight 370, I'm not a total, FAA type of an expert, but I did exercise enforcement in U.S. Customs on aircraft coming into the United States and sometimes leaving the United States for foreign countries. So that means I had to be familiar with private aircraft, commercial aircraft, how to search it, what to look for, the licenses that they require, the paperwork that the pilots have to have, and all kinds of places to smuggle. And I found contraband on commercial flights as well as, over $20,000 cash one day, just to give you an idea. But every time I hear about one of these little incidents where they're missing a plane, that's a flag right there. Two military aircraft that came into the United States were supposed to land in San Diego, one at North Island and one at Miramar, which is now MCAS, Marine Air Station. Used to belong to the Navy in a different way. And when planes are supposed to show up, you have to have like at least an hour's notice so you can get your car, get the paperwork, drive out to the location, be there, at least 30 minutes, no longer than 20 minutes before the guys get there. When they don't arrive, that raises more flags, and that's a serious thing. It's not just an offense, it's a national security issue, because why would the U.S. military lose any of their jets? And what's important about the jet? And do they just write it off like, it's no big deal? No, it is a big deal, because that means they're doing the same thing that you just said earlier. They're lying about it. See, they're covering up. So,
but why? There's always a reason to cover things up. Either A1, the public would just be too afraid. B2, we're corrupt and we might get implicated in some kind of crime. And
yes.
And C3, I just don't know how to explain this to people without them going nuts.
No,
so we're just going to keep it under wraps.
It's common sense. It's exactly what you think. It's number two. The best answer on your school test was always, a good answer would be, a good guess would be B. So I think B fits this one perfectly, because there was a military Marine Corps colonel by the name of James Sabo up in El Toro who was killed because he was getting ready to release information about smuggling of narcotics into the United States using military aircraft. And as a customs officer, I had the ultimate jurisdiction over anybody that arrived into the United States, even if it was from outside the world. Now, I don't want to quote moon rocks, but there's a perfect example. When the moon rocks came in from the moon, guess who had to verify, check it, and see the paperwork, and it had to be listed on, guess what? A manifest. Moon rocks. So back in 1969... I'm not sure what you were doing. What were you doing in 1969? Were you around?
I wasn't even swimming around in my father's left testicle.
My goodness!
I was born in the year of Orwell's 1984.
Oh wow, that's special. So
I thought it was kind of prophetic.
Yeah, it is. So to give you an example, that's something that they had to declare. But unfortunately, there's so much covering up of what's going on. The public has a need to know, but the majority of them who are dumbed down, they don't care about it, so they're part of the problem.
Have you noticed that one of the principal effects of dumbing down is to curb curiosity?
Yeah, that's... I try not to be political about this, because when I was in law enforcement, I thought, hey, there's a black and white job. It's either left or right. Right or wrong, it's pretty much clear about what your job is, what you need to do. And when you arrest somebody, you have evidence, and you put them in prison for a crime or whatever. you put them through the justice system. But in these days, you're not sure what's going on because it's in the gray a lot. And it's Democrats, left-wing Democrats versus right-wing conservative Republicans, or vice versa. And I'll even get into conversations or, I don't want to call it an argument, a challenging conversation over certain terms. And some of these people, you can't even talk to them. It'd be like this friend of mine who's a Jewish rabbi. He was trying to talk sense into some Palestinian Muslim in Israel or something. They don't mingle. It's like oil and water. You know, you can't blend the two. And no matter what you do and try to talk reason, it doesn't work. So the government has a lot of that going on, where they're doing a lot of covering up, because if you found out what was really going on, you'd be scared to death because of all the stuff that they're doing with control and the people with the money. You know, I keep hearing this guy Soros. You know who Soros is?
Oh, George Soros, the big climate change Agenda 21 Codex Alimentarius Mafia Foreign Trading Enron scumsucker.
Perfect, perfect. I'm glad you know.
I was like, boom, boom. I think I nailed him in one.
Yeah, you did. You nailed him, because when you look at people like that and the people, the elite, and when I was in the Secret Service, I protected people like Zbigniew Brzezinski. And, oh, of course, there was Henry Kissinger and the President, Carter, Ford, and all these other people and their families and stuff. But some of these people squeaked in, and you got to wonder, oh, like Nelson Rockefeller, for instance. He's still semi-connected, or was connected to some of those rich elites. And when those people get together, while they're handling all the money, that other guy in the Oval Office is being kept busy with other things, and they're doing all kinds of stuff with decisions that affect the whole world. You know, I mean, to this day, we still have people that are hungry, starving, no water, no food, no shelter, whatever. And we could easily give people stuff to plant food and have water and shelter and trees that produce fruit and all kinds of things. But they're not doing that. And in fact, they're going the opposite direction, where it looks like they want to get rid of half the population of the planet. You know, whatever it is this week, I forget.
At least. And the rate of death in America just caused by the medical system alone, I have no doubt that they're going to achieve their goals fairly soon. And this comes down to the mentality. Now, John, were you born into an incredibly wealthy family, silver spoon in hand, never have to work a frickin' day in your life in order to become real successful and known by everybody? No? Me neither. All right? So we've actually had to earn our way. And in so doing, we need to have respect for other people, respect for people's work, jobs, ethics, their levels of intelligence and things of that nature. However, if we never had to earn any of that knowledge for ourselves, whether by experience, hardship, trauma, etc., we wouldn't have such profound respect for the lives of others, because we've never actually had to go through such struggles. And I think this is kind of the reason why the so-called elite are at such a disconnect with the general public, is because they've never actually had to live like one of us. Sort of like, I don't know, do you know what it's like to be a prairie dog? No, of course you don't, because you're a human. You're not a prairie dog, you know. You don't give a frack. Well, you don't go burrowing down there, do you?
Well, I've lived in the desert. I know what desert survival's like. So I relate to the animal world in a different way. So I appreciate the animal world and understand, you know, like PETA and, you know, all these other groups that they try to support animals. Like here in San Diego, they're trying to support a thing about the whales that are in captivity and something that's probably no bigger than your jacuzzi, you know?
Yeah, and I was just thinking to myself, like, all these organizations, all these bleeding hearts go, oh, save the animals, save the whales, save the snails, you know? It's kind of like, well, are you by chance just sitting there, just like a Christian Children's Fund organization, saying to everybody, we've got this really great cause, etc., give us X amount of money, and we'll send so much of that money to save the whales or save the snails, etc.? But the reality is, in order to advertise to everybody and tell them, hey, you need to give us money so we can save the whales and whatnot, they actually wind up having to spend most of that money on advertising and management and very little of the actual, you know, rich nuggety goodness of people's charity goes through to them. And this is kind of how I think the world really works nowadays, is the vast majority of the things that tell you that they're for a good cause only have a front as a good cause, and whatever they're doing, it ain't good.
Yeah, I mean, over here in California, we get a lot of these groups that will come up to you in a shopping mall, you know, and I'll go walking around. I'll run into a group of people that have Greenpeace shirts all over them, and they want to talk about Greenpeace. They say, hey, you know, I'd rather get a job with Greenpeace because I'm not rich. Maybe I could get a job because I've got such a technical background and I know a lot of stuff. And it never happens, because it's exactly what you just said. They're using that as a front to collect money for other purposes. And the same thing with a lot of these other organizations. And what they do is they go after the unintelligent people who are probably God-fearing people, and there's nothing wrong with that. They go to church every week, that sort of thing. If you're looking at the classic Judeo-Christian type of person, unless they're into Zen Buddhism or some other religion, then it's a little bit different. But they still have the basic same thing. You donate to the poverty people, and hopefully that money gets to the right people that they can feed themselves. But still, to this day, there are people starving right now. And I'm thinking, my God, that is so inhuman to just let that go. You know, if these people have money.
Not entirely dissimilar from the way political parties manipulate people. Just vote for us and we'll solve all your problems. Well, hold on a second, bro. I voted for that guy, that guy, that guy, that guy, that guy, all the way back through the frickin' Nixon administration, and you guys haven't improved jack ever.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of stuff, but, you know, I think it goes back before when Kennedy was killed. If you look at the actual people in charge, but the problem is it's hard to pinpoint who did what to who, because there was more of a mafia, there were outside influences, you had people involved in the Bay of Pigs, they had a revenge factor going on. And now, just recently in the last couple of years, I've learned that more and more attention's focused on LBJ, who was the vice president at the time, and that guy right there would kill his grandmother if he could get president, you know, so it didn't matter. And a lot of evidence is turning up later about that. But there's still people tied up today that are still alive, like George Herbert Walker Bush Sr., who's been CIA. And to this date, he can't remember where he was on November 22nd, 1963.
Oh, right, right. Like everybody can't remember where they were on 9/11. You know, it's a similar thing.
Exactly.
And in fact, do you reckon that the 9/11 case and JFK are so similar in the point that it's a false flag attack or something of that nature, very much covered up by the government. And as time progresses, on and on and on, because it's not here now, people lose interest. And eventually, even if they declassify it, it'll be 50 years too freaking late.
It's a decoy. Don't worry about it. It's a decoy. And I'll tell you why. I mean, it's hard for me to relay this information, but if you look at my website, customscorruption.com, what's left of it now, there's an article near the top where I compared Hitler's Enabling Act to the Patriot Act, which is something Bush got involved in. And if you look in history, you go, well, wait a minute, didn't they have a Reichstag fire or something, and Hitler's guys did that because they wanted to blame it on the Jews? Well, we had the Marat building exploded with the Timothy McVeigh and some other unknown militia types that were retaliating, and that was in 95. That was right around the time Clinton was president and Janet Reno was attorney general and stuff, and then it switched over to George Bush, or I missed my dates there. Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush, that sort of thing. Okay. But point was, that was another flag. Those things didn't happen on their own, and the building didn't fall down, just like 9/11. The buildings didn't fall down because of two aircraft that hit it.
Three buildings didn't fall down because two aircraft hit them?
Well, yeah, exactly. Let's talk about that, too. How come you got the 9/11 buildings, the Twin Towers, and they're talking about building number 4, building number 5, building number 7? Oh, what was it? They decided to implode some buildings that day, the same time they were flying aircraft into the buildings?
At the same time they were running drills about flying aircraft in the buildings?
Well, plus I've got an EOD background. That's explosive ordnance background. And we had to know that stuff to anticipate what people would do for counter-terrorist type activity, or terrorist activity, rather, like Carlos the Jackal back in the 70s, right after Munich in 72. And they would do it exactly that. They would take ammonium nitrate, which is your big bags of fertilizer, stick it in the trunk of a car with as many bags, hundreds of pounds, 500-600 pounds, and then do an igniter. I won't explain how. And they would throw an igniter of some sort, walk away, and a lot of times they would mix it with gasoline, and that would help the other part of the chemicals to mix and cause the explosion. We've known stuff like that since I was taught in the government, Secret Service, CIA, DEA, everybody else in 1974. But we were looking for the same terrorists doing the same things. But when the implosions occur, you've probably seen them. You've seen where they got an old building, they tear apart what they're going to take, and then the rest they're just going to saturate with certain charges around the structure on the interior skeleton of the building. And then they just sit back and implode it, and it all falls into one spot. Real nice and neat. All they have to do is scrape it up and then take all the trash away.
Yeah, perfect sequencing, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And that's exactly what we saw. Not just me, but other EOD-trained people in San Diego, Metro Arson Strike Team, they saw the same stuff at the Morale building. It was a planned detonation. It wasn't something that they just pulled up a truck and ran away and it blew up.
I heard a theory that the plan was actually to fully demolish that entire building, but the certain charges that and other bombs that were planted in the building didn't go off, so it only took out the front half of the building, but they were supposed to take out the whole thing.
Right. I've heard something like that too. They've also found body parts that didn't belong to certain people. One of them was to an Arabic connection, but some of that stuff's speculation, because I've even heard speculation that it's always the Mossad. You know, oh, that's the Mossad, they're doing that. Well, why would Israel cause a problem, and why would they allow Muslims to want to put a temple or a mosque on that sacred site? That doesn't make sense. So, obviously, they're just full of rhetoric, lies, and BS. You know, that's not how the Mossad is. And I know a few people in Israel. They're our allies. So if something happens, they're going to go to war and do what they have to do no matter what. But they're just being nice about it. That's all. They're being very, very nice.
Well, Mossad warned the U.S. government and a number of people leading up to 9/11 that there was something going on. But of course, they were ignored.
What I was going to do, I have to interject real quick. The reason I brought them up in the first place was because a lot of the people that were in the Munich 1972 killings at the Olympics, the Mossad became active, very active right after that through Golda Meir and all those other high-ranking guys like Moshe Dayan and things like that, so that they could go ahead and go after these terrorists. And that was like the focal point or the beginning of their true nature or their true mission, was to go after these people worldwide. Those people were also connected to Nazis back in World War II. Same difference. The Muslims today, the terrorists, connected to the Nazis, same mission, same stuff. Just a different name.
Well, what was it? Mark Twain, who says, history doesn't repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme.
Oh, yeah.
I was also wondering about this, you know. I love the ironic, the funny names of things. Like, for example, is the reason why they call them Mossad is because they're not there to make you more happy.
Yeah, that's an interesting history. I mean, I'm not Jewish, and I'm not Israeli or nothing like that. But you'd have to look at the history. Like the Masada was a tall mountain that they had back when the Romans were around. And there was a lot of Israelis or Jews there at the top, and they were holding them off for like months and months and months. And they even had their own water supply, but eventually they were going to get killed. So they did a mass suicide just to keep from being killed by the Romans. You know, it's kind of a history thing. And it's supposed to be one of those things that they said it would never happen again.
I don't... The subject of Israel, Gaza, etc., makes me inherently uncomfortable as a radio show host. The same reason. Similarly, with let's say, for example, the topic of racism or pedophilia or things like that. Not because I don't know what these are really about and I'm struggling to understand. You know, I know the history and a lot of the facts behind these elements. What is problematic about it is that whenever you mention anything in any way about either of these three topics, you have three sections of reaction. There's the people who are reasonable, who are willing to make a judgment with their mind, and there are those who are unreasonable, who are not willing to make a judgment with their mind, and those are split into two factions of either anti what you say or pro what you say and anti anything anyone else says. You know what I'm saying? There's no balance there. And that's why these topics are often so controversial. Unfortunately, we have just run out of time for this segment here, John. Thank you very much for your contribution. Your website there, I'll make sure to give that out for people, is customscorruption.com. That's customscorruption.com. John, thank you very much for your time today, sir.
Sure, anytime.
All right, we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream, just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted, a fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president it seemed. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go, in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guests still here with me is John Carman, and also we have now joining us from freedomslips.com, Mike Harris. Mike, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks, Vinnie. It's glad to be back on your show again. It's been a while.
It's been a while, too, and it's also been a while since I've talked to John, and I kind of just, you know, was talking to you both at the same time and talking to the producer at Revolution Radio, and I thought, you know what, bugger it. I'm not really doing anything today. I'll interview you and get you both together and see what the hell comes of it, you know? I like to just throw things together and see what happens. My wife doesn't like it when I'm in the kitchen, but, you know, if you want to make an omelette, you've got to break some eggs and leave some shell in there too. Anyway, Mike, can you tell us a little bit about what's been on your mind just of recent late, and we'll see if we can turn a conversation out of it.
Well, what's been on my mind is I look at how thorough and systematic the infiltration of the U.S. government has been by Israeli sympathizers. And it's to the point where I don't think that we have really a Republican form of government in the USA anymore. I think really we're something else now. We're somewhere in that dictatorship range. And I go back to whenever Bush was handed the presidency, December 12th of the year 2000, when the Supreme Court intervened. I look at the trail of tears that's happened since then. I look back to really the linchpin of this started when they murdered JFK. And I look at the one failed policy after the next failed policy after the next failed policy. You know, I mean, the war on poverty didn't work. The war on drugs didn't work. The free trade agreements didn't work. All things are unmitigated disasters. We have a virtual open border in the U.S. now. We've got 55 million illegal aliens living in the country. And I just shake my head and I say, what the heck has happened to my country? What's going on here? And it just it makes me distraught.
Well, I think John's had quite a lot of experience in working for the U.S. government himself, and I think nowadays it's no longer confined to the U.S. as a phenomenon of the government being controlled by overseas foreign interests or something of that nature. I mean, for instance, New Zealand's Prime Minister, who's running for a third election term now, and by all accounts he's probably going to win, despite the fact that every single day it gets revealed a new thing about how he's corrupt, or a new thing about how he's indebted the country, or a new thing about how he's restricted civil liberties. And who was his former employer before he became the Prime Minister of New Zealand? You guessed it, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York on the Foreign Exchange Commission for Derivative Trading, which is something you have to be appointed to. And who was his mentor? Why, it's actually the man who's number one on the list, known as Wall Street's most corrupt person, right? He rubs shoulders with Timmy Geithner. And as far as I'm concerned, guys, there's something rotten inside America, but I don't think it actually originated there. I think Operation Paperclip is in full swing, right? It's like, let's import this big nasty Nazi virus and then let's just inject it into our country. Let's put him in NASA. Let's put him in CIA. Let's put him in this, that, and the other. And all of these Nazis were like, hey, these people are stupid enough to trust us. Maybe we can take over the country from the inside. And then by the time they even realize it, there'll be the new Fourth Reich.
Well, you know, you've got a point. I've had Michael Shrimpton on recently, and he's big on the Nazi involvement, the what he calls the DVD. And, you know, I'd never heard of the DVD before, but if you look at what the DVD is, what they do, if you ever watch the villains in the James Bond movies, that's DVD. These are the guys who are out there doing this stuff. And, you know, I'm of mixed mind here. I see what Israel does, and I see the grief that they've brought to the Middle East and the whole world. And then I wonder about Operation Paperclip. You know, they did bring the whole Galen organization into the CIA. They did put, what's his name? What's that guy's
Werner
name?
Werner von Braun hit a NASA.
Werner von Braun into NASA and put him in charge. And so, yeah, these were committed Nazi SS guys. And so I'm really confused as to who are the real bad guys. I know we got them. We're up to our eyeballs. I look at George H.W. Bush. Now, that's a Nazi. George W. Bush, another Nazi. These guys have done nothing good for this country at all.
And that goes all the way back to Prescott Bush, George H.W. Bush's father, who was charged under the Trading with the Enemy Act for supplying and laundering money for Nazi Germany during the war.
Well, And part of Prescott Bush's plea deal that got him not doing prison time was that he or no member of his family would ever hold public office. And do you remember that White House scandal where they had one of the staff members of the White House was caught with documents that he slipped down his pants out of the Congressional Library of Congress? Sandy Berger was the guy. That was Prescott Bush's original plea deal, and it disappeared.
Unbelievable. So, see, everybody just thought Sandy Berger was what happens when you take some McDonald's to Venice Beach.
Yep, I understand. A Sandy Berger, just don't drop it.
Yeah, it's a bit cheesy, isn't it? So, sorry, John, you were saying something about this, weren't you? Because I'm thinking, like, infiltration, right? This is something in those... in those Dan Brown novels that they talk about, the Illuminati are really, really good at, regardless of whether or not you believe there's actually an official organization for the Illuminati. In my opinion, it's actually kind of more of a mentality or a way of doing things, a culture, rather than an actual physical organization that has like a head office and whatnot. What do you think about that, John?
Well, I'm not a total expert, and I understand what you guys are saying, but it's kind of like when I was at the White House and I'm protecting people like Henry Kissinger, and people point him out as being one of these Illuminati types. So then I go, okay, that's interesting. But we didn't talk about it back then as we know the information today. In other words, it was kind of around us, but I didn't see it. It wasn't obvious, in other words. And then we got Zbigniew Brzezinski, and what's he doing? You know, and a lot of these people influence the person that they have in the Oval Office And a lot of people assume that that man in the Oval Office, no matter who it is this week, knows everything, and they don't. I think that Jimmy Carter, in defense of him at some point in time, was being misinformed. He was being manipulated by information he was not getting properly. And at one point, he even asked George Herbert Walker Sr. for help on something, and Bush blew him off, saying, well, you've got access to the Library of Congress. Go do your own research.
Go look it up.
And that man was in the CIA for like forever, and probably in Dallas that day in 1963. And this man, who's the president of the United States, most powerful position in the world, probably. I tell you what, if it was me and that guy didn't cooperate, I'd have him down on his knees in the next 24 hours, pretending to say what he knew. You know,
I'd have him locked out of his office if he was still at the CIA
or but something.
You brought up a good point there, John. And the point is that, you know, yes, Dr. Jim Fetzer has got photographs that show George H.W. Bush was at Daley Plaza the day that JFK was killed.
Right.
And you look at this guy. He was director of the CIA. He was the DCI, Director of Central Intelligence. He was 8 years as Reagan's vice president. He had his own presidency for 4 years. He was very close to the Clinton administration during their reign. And then he had his own son in there for 8 years. This guy's got 50 years with which to influence the U.S. government by appointments, by putting people he knows and trusts who are loyal to him in various positions of power. And I find that to be one of the most frightening things. And then Go ahead.
I was going to interject that that's exactly what they talked about on some of those old movies about JFK, was that they didn't want 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 consecutive terms of all Kennedys. And this is Executive Action, if you remember that movie.
Yes.
That was the one that first came out. That was the first Oliver Stone movie, basically, that really spelled out a lot of information. And then after that, they took off on different movies and stuff describing that feeling. But that's exactly what they did with the Bush family, you know. And if they can't get Jeb Bush in there, who else is going to get in there? And I heard
a comedian once say that you know a family is pretty frickin' dumb if the smartest one is named Jeb.
Jeb.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I look at what our 2016 choice is likely to be. It's likely to be Jeb Bush versus Hillary Clinton. And, you know, I'd rather stick a gun in my mouth and pull the trigger than vote for either one of those.
Well, I'll run for office, and you can put me in there, and I'll fix things. You know,
what would you fix? What would the first thing you'd do be?
Oh, I'd start at the top and fire everybody and then replace them with people I knew that were trustworthy, because that's always been the problem. You know, corruption does not exist at the bottom without the top being involved. You got to cut the head of the snake's head off to get to the rest of the body. They're never going to do that. It's like since 1974... Well, actually, it was in 75 or 76. I was actually in the executive office building doing my security rounds, and I came across this office, which I'm supposed to check and make sure there's no documents that say top secret laying around and the safe's not closed properly. And I believe that was the NDCP, National Drug Control Policy Director's Office, Peter Benziger at the time, I think. And you got a Border Patrol guy in the southwest border asking for help. They've got less than 10,000 agents all across the border, and they need like 50 right now, you know, and they're talking about all this other stuff. You know, look at what Obama's been doing, you know, Mr. Kenya. So a lot of this stuff's been covered up, and it's never changing. And they always tell you they're going to fix this. They don't. They lie.
Can I interject something here? Because it reminds me of a New Zealand film made by a documentary filmmaker here called Alistair Barry. And there's a reason I'm saying this, of course. It might not be relevant until I get to the punchline. But he interviewed a whole bunch of our former prime ministers, our former heads of cabinet and heads of state and things of that nature, asking them what their first night as their head of state or whatever was like. And you know what was really funny? Every single prime minister promised the people this, that, and the other. We're going to cut taxes. We're going to try to keep our state assets and our strategic assets in New Zealand control and out of the hands of foreigners, blah, 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 blah. X amount of really, really great campaign promises that I'm sure we've all heard in every single country. And you know what they said? every single time, this was like four prime ministers this guy interviewed, all their assistants, he said they all got a phone call that night from Treasury saying, congratulations, Mr. Prime Minister, I've got some bad news. There's been some really bad economic turmoil building up in the quote-unquote background that was caused by the quote-unquote other guys before you, and you basically have to renege on every single one of your promises, or we're going to collapse the economy. All right? And so when people were talking about corruption, and I think this is what we, I think John made a very good point there about firing a lot of the people at the top, is because Treasury was actually running our country and still is to this day. Because what doesn't change once you elect a new head of state? The bureaucracy. Well,
the bureaucracy never changes because exactly. These are all lifers. And that's one of the things I think we should do is take anybody who's a GS-15 or above and offer them early retirement.
Right. Oh, that's good. That's exactly a good point, because a lot of those people are still there because they're civil servants, but some of them are appointed, like in the United States Treasury Department, they go up to a certain GS-15, actually GS-13 or 14, then they become...
Sorry, I'm unfamiliar with GS-13, 15,
yeah,
these references.
Yeah, I was going to explain that.
A GS-15 is the equivalent of a colonel in the Army.
Okay.
And so you've got someone who's got some ability, some authority, and they're in a position of relative power over whatever their bailiwick is, whether they're in Department of Transportation, whether they're in housing and urban development, whether they're in defense, whatever. They're a civilian employee who's a bureaucrat who's there no matter who comes and goes through the elected process. They're always there. And they can influence how the laws are implemented, how the regulations are seen through, if you will. And it's a real problem because, like you just point out, they don't change. They're always there.
Yeah, they've got stuff higher than GS-15 or 14, which is senior executive service, which takes them out of the control of the civil service, and they're actually special people between that and the appointees. And the appointees are guaranteed a job plus all these other benefits like congressmen, senators, and the commissioner of customs, for instance, because that's one step away from the White House, you know, the cabinet members and things like that. So it's that chain of succession that gets involved later.
Now, I'd also like to make an interesting point here. I'm sure you guys have heard the news that Robin Williams just died. And you know what happens on film sites? You know how people illegally download movies and watch them and things of that nature? All these Robin Williams films started being watched again just after he died. And one of them was a film called Man of the Year. Have you guys seen this film?
I don't remember it.
Okay, you're gonna want to watch this film, okay? Robin Williams, on that same year he made that movie, did a stand-up comedy sketch called Weapons of Self-Destruction, where he criticizes the U.S. government, where he talks about how lobbyists are in control of the country, how poor people can't afford lobbyists of their own, and how the politicians, etc., should wear very similar uniform styles to NASCAR, how you have, you know, Mobil and,
who's sponsoring
and Goldman Sachs.
Them. Yeah.
You know.
That would be too good to be true.
Well, incidentally, this was what film Man of the Year was actually about, is Robin Williams is playing a comedian talk show host, very similar to the vein of, say, Jon Stewart political comedy. And they made the point in the film that he should actually run for president. And he does. And he wins. So a comedian becomes the leader of the free world. How does he win, though? He wins because the corrupt company that makes the electronic voting machines tried to conceal a glitch that accidentally split the vote and clipped him and made him the president. And then they try to assassinate the woman from within that company who actually exposed it, right? And she manages to find the president, tell him about this glitch, and he's faced with a very important choice. Do I, considering there's no other evidence or whatever that this ever happened, because there's no voting records from the machines, do I, A1, keep continuing to be president as the first comedian president and actually try and do some good with this country, or do I do the honest thing and step down? And he did step down, Right. And I thought that this was quite a profound film, in fact, because you're talking about how the US is truly run, and it's only through the comedians that you will hear that news, and it's only through the news that you'll actually just laugh at everybody.
Hey, I got to ask you a question.
Shoot.
How well do you know about the registration, voter registration in the United States as opposed to other countries like Mexico? I don't know about New Zealand, but are you familiar?
Slightly. If you're black, you get struck off the roll in a lot of southern states because you traditionally vote Democrat, and that's what they did in the 2000 election with Bush. If you have criminal convictions, you're not allowed to vote. And so it's like, oh, you've had a criminal conviction for a law that perhaps, I don't know, doesn't have any validity or whatever, so therefore you're no longer allowed to determine the leadership of your country. I think that's kind of unfair.
Well,
what, 20% of Americans even vote anyway? So you're talking about 80% apathy versus 20% stupidity, and the stupidity always wins.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. But what I was going to point out specifically was that a lot of people assume that they have certain freedoms, and to vote is ridiculous because it doesn't exist. You can go to Mexico and get a voter registration card with your photograph, thumbprint, a verified address, and that's better than a national ID card. That's what they use in Mexico right now, and they still have overturned elections because of people that they put in the computer. The United States, on the other hand, they get people registered out of, they come out of a supermarket somewhere, name your favorite largest supermarket, Walmart or whatever, and there's a guy out there sitting there, all he does all day is just take registrations and get people to sign signatures on ballots and stuff, and he doesn't even ask them or verify their citizenship because people are so damn stupid. The voter registrar takes all these affidavits. Oh, we got Mr. and Mrs. Juan Lopez from Tijuana, Mexico, and here's their U.S. address, and they just registered to vote. They're new Democrats this week. Not to mention all the dead people, you know.
Well, Vinny and John, the biggest problem, I think, in the U.S., the biggest problem is that we outsource our civic responsibility. We no longer do the things that matter. We got fat, dumb, and happy. We became very lazy as a people. That's why we're having the problems we're having right now.
I actually, you just kind of nailed it there, didn't you, John?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, because there's another word I'm trying to think of, but it's probably too far advanced for my time of day or something, but it's the same thing. It's a laziness that, as he pointed out, because over the years, you just kind of get used to it, but that's like the frog in the boiling water trick, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's sloth, you know, at the end of the day.
It really is. We don't deserve to be free unless we're willing to get up off the sofa and go do something about it.
I mean, to many Americans, freedom is simply being able to buy McDonald's down the end of the street without end. You know, freedom is being able to eat without a knife and fork or without cooking for 10 years in a row. You know what I'm saying? That's mm-hmm. that's not freedom, okay? Freedom is being able to, I don't know, make a difference in your own community just because you want to make that difference, because you actually want to put the effort in. Freedom is being able to invent stuff without the government coming and taking your patents and shutting your ass down. Freedom is about actually being free, not having all these trinkets of a modern society that actually have no value to the soul, the conscience, or the nation as a whole.
Yeah, that's just stuff. People collect stuff, but they don't know what real freedom is, especially when you've been locked up like I have. You know, something I don't go into too often, but people don't realize it. Just to bring up an example, I know a guy who's the first black agent to John F. Kennedy on his presidential detail, Abraham Bolden, and they set him up years ago to discredit him. That's what the government does when you expose the truth, like you guys are helping to do by us just talking on the airwaves here, and you can be a target as well. I mean, they can find something, they'll arrest you on a bogus charge, they'll use new illegal alien like they did on me, who was actually previously convicted for setting people up in line, and yet the jury still doesn't understand that. Those people are dumb, you know. And the judge certainly went along with it. So Who appointed that judge? Oh, yeah, it was Bill Clinton.
Oh, my God. It reminds me of, like, how dumb jurors are. I recall listening to the radio here in New Zealand, and this dude called up, and he said, you know, I was on a jury this one time, and one lady decided that the person was guilty because the guy was wearing a yellow tie, and people who wear yellow ties don't tell the truth, she said.
Psychotic.
And the guy got convicted and sent to jail for 6 years.
Oh, my God.
Well, Vinny, I thought of something while we've been talking here. That is, you know, you talked about how the Treasury would call the newly elected prime minister and tell him that the economic collapse is going to come if you implement any of your new programs. I think the way to get elected then is just promise that you're going to collapse the economy. And then you pull the teeth from the Treasury. So, well, great, you're here to help me. Thank you so much.
Well, you know, that might work if you did it. Actually, that would work on a private platform. For example, backroom deals and what have you. Hey, Treasury, I'm going to collapse the economy. Don't worry, boys. We've got the stuff well in hand. And then you go out to the public and you say, I'm going to create jobs. I'm going to fashion the economy. I'm going to create a green industry, blah, 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 blah. And you tell everybody, you know, you're going to loosen our dependence on foreign oil. You're going to cut taxes. You're going to do all this stuff. And you're going to get everything back on track. And meanwhile, in the backroom deal, you just say the exact opposite thing, and then boom, your super PAC comes in, all your political donations increase exponentially because everybody's stupid enough to think that you're telling the truth to the public. And then, hey, once you actually get into politics, once you actually get in there, it's kind of like Bill Hicks said, there's a dark, smoky room with a couple of guys smoking on cigars. New president comes in, one guy says, roll the film. And it's a shot of the Kennedy assassination from an angle you've never seen before, almost suspiciously as though it's from the grassy knoll. And they roll the film, and then they turn to the president and they say, have you got any questions? And he goes, oh, well, only what my agenda is.
Yeah, I've seen that film many times, different angles.
Yeah. All right, speaking of different angles, we've come to the end of the segment right this moment. John Carman, ladies and gentlemen, I think you need to give out your email address, didn't you, John, because your website's not updated all that quickly these days.
Yes, could I please?
Go for your life, son.
First, it's a website, customscorruption.com, or you can Google John Carman, C-A-R-M-A-N. And if anybody's interested in sending me a nice email or maybe an attached PayPal donation, I appreciate that. John.A.Carman, C-A-R-M-A-N, @gmail.com. That was kind of a joke about the PayPal, but you never know.
Yeah, I never joke about money. Except when it's the government's money. Mike Harris as well, he's here with us. He has a show 5 days a week from 2 p.m. till 4 p.m. Eastern Time on freedomslips.com. Ladies and gentlemen, that's freedomslips.com.
Studio B, actually.
Studio B, yes.
Studio B. So if you want to come tune in, listen, we get some pretty spirited debates, and we're not afraid to call a spade a spade.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't use the N-word then, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, the N-word, I do use the N-word. I use the word Negroes, which is the proper scientific racial category. I won't use the other one because I think it's disrespectful. I don't want to disrespect anyone. Like, yeah. I'm a Caucasian, they're Negroes, and, you know, the Asians are really Mongoloids, or, you know, however you want to slice that. And so there's proper terminologies, and there's improper.
Yeah.
I'm kind of teasing you a little bit because I got black friends, and I got one lady black a friend of mine. She says, "Oh, you can't call me black. I'm something else this week," because that's back in the old days when they used to call them blacks, Negroes, and so on and so forth.
Would you guys like to continue this conversation about racism after the break?
Well, that's
yeah, sure. What the heck? Let's go ahead.
You want one more segment? No, you know, I'm having fun. No. Are you having fun? I hope the audience is too. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere.